Welcome to Guys We Fucked. Guys We Fucked.
Guys We Fucked.
I'm Christina.
I'm Corinne.
We're sorry about last night.
Fucked. The anti-slut shaming podcast. I never stop.
Yo, what up, fuckers? Welcome to another episode of Guys We Fucked.
It's the anti-slut shaming podcast. I'm Corinne.
I'm Christina.
And thank you so much to our sponsor for today's episode. It's Skin Condoms. That's S-K-Y-N. We've been wearing and giving out skin condoms for like the whole 4 years we've been doing this podcast. They've been a big supporter of us. If you're having fun, consensual sex, you know, put a condom on.
Wrap it up.
It's a great idea. There's a lot of things that condoms can prevent. They're for everybody and every sexual preference. So just remember that everyone needs a condom. I feel like that should be like a song, like everyone needs a condom. Your sex life is about to get more intimate. Condoms are made from a revolutionary polyisoprene material called SkinFeel. It's softer and more comfortable than traditional latex while allowing for better heat transfer, which is always nice. You don't need a cold body part inside you.
So true.
So both you and your partner get a natural feel full of sensitivity for a more connected sexual experience. Skin condoms are completely safe for anyone with a latex allergy, and they're just as safe as latex condoms. They offer the same level of protection against pregnancy and STIs. And now you guys can use code 15SKINFEB.
Wow.
Like February, for 15% off the Skin Selection 24 pack on Amazon. So you're getting it for cheap on Amazon, and then you're getting an additional 15% off for February, which is Valentine's Day. Enjoy, guys.
Damn.
It'll be fun.
I use skin condoms all the damn time. I used skin condom last night. Oh, suck it. Come see us live, Virginia Beach, February 22nd. We're going to be at the Funny Bone. That is a town that I grew up in. I fucking love Virginia Beach. Come out. It's going to be a very fun night. For tickets, go to sorryaboutlastnightcomedy.com/tours. And for all the other dates, because we're going to be in a bunch of other places. We got Denver. We got Portland. We got... I don't fucking know.
Winnipeg. A
lot of other places. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. And if you want more cartoon voices in your life, you probably do, right? Because, yeah, whatever. Maybe It's You is an album that Joseph Vessi and I created, original songs and sketches. It's available right now on iTunes and Google Play for $10. Go live your life and buy it.
And if you're in New York, Nacho Bitches is on Friday, February 23rd at New York Comedy Club, co-hosted by myself and a special co-host. We're going to have a sick lineup that night. It's 11:15 p.m. New York Comedy Club is 24th Street and 2nd Avenue. And as always, use code NACHO for $12 tickets. This is a 16 and up show. Very rarely do shows with that young of an age limit. Obviously, you have to be 21 to drink. Don't be a fool. But 16 and up, you can come and enjoy the show, which is neat.
Yeah, super neat. And then the next day, also neat, fucking Glamour Post is happening in New York City in the West Village at Zinc Bar, hosted by myself and Wendy Starling. Saturday the 24th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are $15. You got to be 21, though. And yeah, the link for the tickets is in the description of this very podcast episode that you are listening to. Speaking of this very podcast episode, Fab Fit Fun. FabFitFun is a seasonal subscription box for busy women to discover brands and products for a life well-lived. More than just a beauty sample box, FabFitFun delivers a mix of full-size fashion, beauty, home, fitness, and wellness products to your door 4 times a year for just $49.99 a box. FabFitFun's spring box is on pre-sale now, which includes a lip statement palette and an oh-so-cute Rachel Pally clutch that comes in 3 reversible colors. It's true. I own both of those things currently, and they're really fucking cool. I really love box subscriptions, and this is my favorite one because it introduces me to brands I wouldn't have never thought of or to buy, and products I never would have thought to buy, and everything that comes in the box I fucking love. And it's like Christmas every time you get it. It's very exciting. So to try FabFitFun today, go to FabFitFun.com GetFun.com to subscribe and start getting the box for a life well lived. Use promo code GWF to get $10 off your first box. That's products valued at $200 for only $39.99. Again, go to FabFitFun.com and use code GWF to get $10 off your first FabFitFun box.
And after you close that FabFitFun box, because you're like, I can't have this much fun.
So fit.
But I'm so fit. I'm so fat. And I'm having so much fun. It's almost overwhelming. Then you're going to put on your Me Undies. Me Undies is the best underwear you will ever own. The copy does say that. But also, I'm going to give...
It's true as hell.
I'm going to give that a Corinne Fisher stamp of approval. Made from sustainably sourced, naturally soft fabric that is 3 times softer than cotton. Me Undies will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you own and probably the cutest.
So true.
If you're putting silk and shit on your vagina, what era are you living in?
Everyone like it makes knows. My vagina like more wet. Well, in a bad way. Like,
yeah,
it's
no,
weird. It's like you sweat differently in different cloths.
Yeah, you can't. You need breathe. You need breathable underwear.
Your pussy gotta breathe, yo.
It needs to breathe. So you know you're trying to be sexy. You're gonna end up with some kind of an infection down there. You don't need that. Me Undies are made from, again, it's a sustainably sourced, naturally soft fabric. They are the ultimate feel good undies for you when you want to feel naked. Not be naked.
Oh, I see what they did.
I mean, that's a market that you need a corner. Ladies, they come in tons of different colors and styles, but I think men can be included in that too. That's not just a ladies thing.
Yeah, men can want to feel naked and not be naked too.
But also want like cute styles.
True.
Including solids and lace, boy short, bikini and thong, something for everyone and every occasion. Fellas. The diamond seamed pouch gives your stuff the support it needs without feeling too tight, which I will say is true. James does wear his Me Undies around a lot. And the diamond.
It cuddles the dick nice.
It cradles his penis. And I do notice
baby.
It.
Little baby.
And he likes to walk around like Winnie the Pooh a lot. So I appreciate the
shirt.
Me Undies. I mean, you know, dicks are great and stuff, but I don't need to be seeing them.
I see it all the time.
In the wild, all the time. MeUndies is so sure you will love their underwear. They offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you don't love your first pair, get a full refund. And I mean, in my opinion, make sure to send it back real soiled.
But you won't because you'll love it so much.
Don't tell him I said that. Right now, GWF listeners,
oh my God,
will get 20% off your first pair and free shipping. It's a no-brainer. 20% off, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee. What are you waiting for? To get your 20% off, free shipping, and their 100% satisfaction guarantee and get the best and softest underwear you will ever own, go to MeUndies.com/GWF. Again, that's MeUndies.com/GWF. It's a limited time offer, so just like fucking do it right now. Start wearing the best underwear of your life.
Oh my God.
MeUndies.com/GWF. Thank you.
Boom. You want to read your email first? You want me to read my email first?
You can go.
Okay. We're recording 2 episodes in a row. So if something crazy has happened in the past week, and we're not going to talk about because we're in the past week. You know what I mean? That makes sense, right? Whatever. Yeah. The subject is, Aziz Ansari has my boyfriend questioning his sexual relationships, and I'm kind of annoyed by it. Mm-hmm. Hey, ladies. Of course, I love you too in this podcast. So amidst all the allegations being strewn across the media regarding sexual assault, rape, consent, etc., my boyfriend and I have had plenty of discussions about where we stand on all of it, that sexual assault is any kind is wrong and should never be tolerated. But cut to this past Sunday night as we are in bed ready to go to sleep when he blurts out, "Babe, I have a question, serious question, and I need you to be 100% honest with me." To which I immediately reply, "What the? Of course." Sorry, I'm sure you're better than that. His next question to me is what has me writing you today. "Babe, have I ever done anything to you sexually or otherwise that you weren't completely okay with and you just didn't say anything?" Without a thought, I responded with an enthusiastic "No, but we have an adventurous sex life," to which we communicate about needs, wants, and boundaries. I have never been in a situation with him that would warrant questioning my level of comfort and consent to any of this. I wanted to know where this was coming from, and he said he has been worried about this and questioning not only our relationship, but previous ones as well, since reading an article about Aziz Ansari and the allegations made against him. While I appreciate that he, as a man, is thinking about this and understanding the need for the conversation as a society, it had me thinking a bit deeper into it as well. My boyfriend is a good man. He's mindful of others, respectful and of people in general, and about the most respectful to women that I have ever met. Oh, and proof that chivalry isn't dead, even though I can open my own goddamn door. I actually like that he does this. I am a feminist. I believe that women are just as valuable as men and deserve all the same treatment, pay, etc. as men. I believe that women can be just as shitty as men too. I also feel that with the current sexual assault climate, there are some women who are going to take advantage of it. Unpopular opinion, I am very sure. But you're right, there are some. I obviously don't know what happened between Aziz and the woman. Sorry, I didn't even look up her name, if there's even been published. But I feel that I need to speak some of my truth. I am not here to be to victim shame or victim blame by any means. I feel like I just need to share my opinion and see if what I'm thinking is completely off the wall. Are we getting to a place as a society that every sexual encounter needs to be signed legal consent form? Maybe alongside that, a non-disclosure agreement? As a single woman, I have plenty of dissatisfying or altogether bad sexual experiences. I have been sexually assaulted, groped, ogled, catcalled, all of that. I have been raped. I have also been raped by a boyfriend, to which I have never looked at as rape until learning that your boyfriend, lover, husband can actually rape you. Yeah. But with all of that, where is the line in the sand? When is our responsibility to get ourselves or keep ourselves out of situations like the one with Aziz Ansari? I'm not talking about textbook rape here, forceful, unwarranted, unwanted, etc. I'm talking about putting ourselves in a position to take an Uber back to someone's home, have drinks with them, be mindful enough to get naked, or let them get you naked, sleep with said person, and then text them the next day and say that that wasn't wanted for one reason or another. I know I wasn't there, but if the person you are with is thinking it's consensual and you aren't saying or doing anything otherwise, how are they supposed to know? I feel that it is just as much our responsibility to make sure the situation is consensual as it is the other person's. We as women must speak up. We have to stop making ourselves the victims in situations like this before and during. Maybe this is just me, but we are just as responsible. No woman is asking for it, regardless of the situation, but we aren't sheep waiting for the slaughter. We are human beings that need to speak for ourselves, our bodies, and if we don't like something, we need to say it, scream it, fucking shout it on the rooftop. We can't be complacent, then send a text the next day and leak it to the media. I don't know how the media got a hold of it, so I'm assuming it was leaked. Yes, it was. These situations / stories are making good people question themselves. Thank you for taking the time to read this. I hope I'm not the only one thinking it. I thought that was interesting because there is that one. I mean, the situation she's describing with her boyfriend just asking and being like, hey, did I ever do anything weird? Mm-hmm. That to me is an annoying. But some guys are, I've witnessed, be very annoying about it.
Well, I was going to say, I was like,
the opposite direction. Like, yeah. I'm just going to look at her and she's going to accuse me of rape. Go fuck yourself. You know, that's not true. We're not idiots. Fuck you. But it, you know, the notion that women have been socialized, and it's true, to be agreeable, whether you fell for it or not. I fell for it. Corinne didn't. Cool. Everybody's different. So in a situation like the Grace and Aziz thing, you know, maybe, I don't know what the fuck was going on in her head, but also I do understand that a person can feel trapped, and even though they can call an Uber and leave and they don't feel physically, they don't feel like they're being physically threatened, it's not as easy as just doing that. And, you know, sometimes people, men, when you reject them, or women sometimes, I guess too, but men are stronger than women physically. They get mad when you say no. And so that's also a risk. There's just so many fucking factors that everybody's experiences, you can't group it all.
Well, I'm just kind of down like a side street, a little bit unrelated, but I think still related, is like when dealing with celebrities, I mean, specifically, like, it's like number one, a celebrity in real life is not the person that they portray in movies or on TV. So don't Correct. Expect them to be that.
Yeah.
And celebrities, even though they are this kind of elevated human form, are still humans and are still, you know, can be nervous, unsure of themselves, dorky, not smooth, not how to do anything. Thing, bad in bed, gross human beings. I mean, they can be all of these things no matter what they are. And this is, again, not putting like the, you know, we talked about this at length, so you guys know our feelings on yeah. these seasons. Aren't they? I, from the subject line, thought this was more going to be like, oh my God, my boyfriend won't stop asking me.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
If he did rapey stuff, and it's like, that is a thing. So it's like, you know what you've done. And if you are that as a, you know, specifically usually men, and if you are that unclear with how how you are coming across, like that. You just need to take a moment and self-reflect. Like the same way, you know, Black people don't need to give white people lessons in how to interact with them. Women also don't need to give lessons in how to interact with men. Like we're all fucking adults in this situation.
Yeah. And I want to recommend, and we'll put it in the description of this podcast. Hopefully I'll remember. I'll remember. There is an article on theweek.com by Lily Loofborough.
It's called
The Female Price of Male Pleasure. And I'm just going to read like the first two paragraphs. I recommend highly every single person listening to this read it. You're going to get a lot. She articulates the issue perfectly. She says, the world is disturbingly comfortable with the fact that women sometimes leave a sexual encounter in tears. When Babe.net published the synonymous woman's account of a difficult encounter with Aziz Ansari that made her cry, the internet exploded with takes arguing that hashtag MeToo movement has finally gone too far. Grace, the 23-year-old woman, was not an employee of Ansari's, meaning there were no workplace dynamics. Her repeated objections and pleas that they slow down were all well and good, but they did not square with the fact that she eventually gave Ansari oral sex. Finally, crucially, she was free to leave. Why didn't she just get out of there as soon as she felt comfortable? Many people explicitly or implicitly asked. It's a rich question and there are plenty of possible answers. But if you're asking in good faith, if you really want to think through why someone might have acted as she did, the most important one is this. Women are enculturated to be uncomfortable most of the time and to ignore their discomfort. This article goes on for long and it's very smart and you should read it.
Yeah, I read that article after you recommended reading it. And I thought it was interesting because I think the article is very strong. I thought actually the weakest part of the article was that she brought the Ansari thing into it at all. Because to me, the most interesting part by a landslide was the surveys of men and women and how they defined what bad sex and how so often bad sex to women is sex that is actually physically or emotionally uncomfortable, where bad sex to men is just like, didn't come or it wasn't easy.
Yeah.
And that to me was something that is not talked about enough. And nope. It's so true. It's like, I've never even had a conversation with any of my male friends. And I've had very in-depth sexual conversations with my male friends, have a lot of both gay and straight male friends who I talk with things very openly. And I don't remember any instance of them saying something was actually physically uncomfortable. I mean, James told me about someone vomiting on his dick, but other than that, like, that's just gross. That's not actually causing I don't think that caused him any mental duress.
He didn't keep going with the sex in pain.
Right. Yeah.
And the amount of time when I read that part, you're right. I'm glad you pointed that out because it's been a while since I read the article.
Yeah.
That when I got to that part, I realized how many times recently, and I was masturbating in the hotel the other day, and I was telling you about this. The pain, I have pain sometimes right after sex, and I don't think I've ever talked about it on the podcast, which is so fucked up. Like, that's such a clear example of like, whatever. I host a popular sex podcast. How I have not talked about that is kind of fucking dumb.
Right.
And that I had a similar pain after I masturbated. And it felt like the insides of my intestines were sticking to my abdominal wall. I don't know how to describe it. I had surgery. The doctor found nothing. She said, I'm fine. But like, I'm obviously not fucking fine. Mm. And I just kind of ignored it. And then when I read that article, I'm like, fuck. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just totally disregard my physical pain. Mm-hmm. And I've had sex with Steven before where I'm in that physical pain, but I just don't acknowledge it.
See, I always stop give him a cue. Sex when I'm in pain because of, like, the minute it stops being pleasurable for me, especially with a long-term boyfriend. I mean, I can think of one instance where I was like, this isn't great, but you know, where I just let it go. Cause it was like a friend and I was like, this is not even like worth the conversation. It was more of just like, sometimes you do things for friends. You know, even that, it's like, why are we having sex? That's not like the point of sex, unless you are trying to make a baby, is like for human, you know, for a deeper connection with someone. And then also pleasure. Just physical pleasure. And, but I mean that seasickness that I mention a lot that I have, that's what that fingered, is.
Right?
There's like a nausea. And I mean, it's every now and again, it does feel like, I mean, I know it's not, but it does feel like the dick is like coming up and like poking like the back of my stomach near my belly button.
Yeah.
So like anytime I get that feeling, I'm like, we gotta stop because like this doesn't feel good. I'm like, we can do something else. We can do fingers or mouths or something, but like, I am not gonna continue with penis and vagina intercourse if it is painful for me. Anytime, really, especially at 32 in a long-term relationship, like just no.
Yeah.
Like fucking close the garbage, James.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's a personal thing that's going on right now.
Yeah, please close the goddamn garbage. Put a weight on it. Put a book on it. It's not that hard. Just put a fucking book on it. Yeah, the amount of times that I have endured pain during sex with Steven, who would have, of course, stopped immediately if I said, hey, I'm in pain. He would have, he doesn't give a shit. Like, he doesn't want me to do that. So, I don't know. Just don't fucking listen to your body and speak up. But it's also, it can be very difficult for some people. And if you don't understand that, fine. Listen to us, please.
Right. Well, I mean, and the sex should not be painful on the reg. And if a woman, especially if a woman is telling you she's in physical pain, she really is.
Yeah.
Because women have a high threshold.
Yeah.
Remember when we popped babies out of vagina? I didn't bite her. The other people did it. All right, guys. We have a phenomenal guest for you today. This is a comedian who I've done numerous shows about. And I'm so glad she's in New York with us now. Please catch her doing a live show if you have the opportunity. Give a warm welcome to Chanel Ali.
I'm the product of a flawed system. I'm the answer to all your questions. But no one asked you, so I must abstain. If you need me, I'll be on my 15-minute break. Freshly polished from my undergrad. Tell you about the work experience I had. I'm a seed for all these great ideas. Too bad sun and water are my biggest fears. My tank's on empty. I'm running on fumes. Please, someone help me. I am my own work of fiction. How is this under my 24-year-old jurisdiction? Am I really all we've got? 'Cause if I am, we're not. In all my grown-up clothes, got a briefcase and a freshly brown nose. I know all the terminology to disguise my incompetency. Don't be distracted by my fresh young face. I assure you I don't know my place. Rising earlier and running late. Don't know how much longer I can fake it. Let's stop working. We're trying to.
Okay, we are here with Chanel Ali. How you doing?
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course.
Thanks for being here.
You have a very calm energy. I like this. This is good. We've had a lot of good energies in here today. So
yeah, we're doing
which I needed.
Are you okay?
I'm always okay, but always not okay. You know, that's the life of a comedian.
How are you,
believe.
Chanel?
I'm doing pretty good right now. I'm doing pretty good.
Today, for the moment, it is temporary.
Today is good. I try to take it day by day. Just I'm sure that's, as you do.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know? That's when you say I have a calm energy. I'm always like encouraging comedians to take deep breaths.
Are you?
All the time. I'm always like, hey, when's the last time you like were quiet and just like took a couple big deep breaths? And they're always like, years.
Really?
Whoa. It's been years since I just focused on my breath for a few moments. Because like we just, you know, we just stockpile it, just try to keep moving.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I like running, because you actually, I mean, you have to breathe, otherwise you'll die.
Totally.
It's so very, true. Very important.
So true, it's like running. A meditative practice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know. That's why I do like, it's so painful, but it's like the only time I have quiet time to think to myself, because it's so much talking in this business, so much people talking like at you.
Oh my gosh.
Not with you, just at you.
Yeah.
That's a lot. But so you moved from Philly.
Mm-hmm.
And how long have you officially been here?
Like
two and five.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I knew the Super Bowl. I was like, man, these fuckers win. They're going to trash the city anyway.
I was like, this city's going to burn down.
And they won. I'm like, you guys.
Yeah. We needed the win though. We did.
We did. I'm so happy. That was a great fucking game.
Mm-hmm. So I've been here 2.5 years.
Okay.
2.5 years. And I was doing comedy in Philly for like 2 years before that.
How's the Philly comedy scene?
It's small, but it's mighty. There's some good mics, and you can get in with the clubs and do spots here and there, maybe feature, maybe host if you get real good. So it's not bad. It's not bad. It's awesome. Very small, but it's not bad.
And what was the decision? Like, was it just comedy based to move to New York City?
Yeah. I just was like, man, you know, Kevin Hart was joking here for like a decade.
Yeah.
He was just really going to town, and I don't want to play that type of long game. You know, I really want to go where I think the opportunity is. And I thought that New York would make me better. I was like, I think the stages there will
for sure
round me out and force me to like read the newspaper and shit. And like,
it does, you know, like, New York audiences are very like, you can go as specific as you want or as niche as you think it is. And then the audience, you'll find an audience that's like, oh yeah, I love that.
Yeah. And Brooklyn, I feel like they challenge you a lot to like be in the know.
Yep.
So I was like, I'm ready to take it up a notch, you know, let's just jump.
Yeah.
And has it done that for you? You feel like did New York deliver on what you thought New York would be?
Totally. Totally. It's been like fame, you know, it's been like the stuff of dreams, but also severe poverty in the beginning, you know,
man.
But it felt good
the
to
severest.
Like, it felt good to be
to the
honest.
Point where it's kind of funny.
Yes.
Like it's sometimes because you're like, I can't even afford a subway ride.
Yeah. This I was stealing.
I would steal toilet paper from work or from like a Starbucks bathroom.
Yeah.
Like, you do what you do.
When I first moved up here, I moved into an Airbnb for a couple of weeks. I just paid it up for a couple of weeks so that I could look for a place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was just stealing. I was just taking stuff. I was like, what is this conditioner? It's mine. I'm taking this.
Yeah, I feel like toiletries, like, is it really stealing?
I don't really feel that bad.
Yeah. How do they know you didn't just need a ton of shampoo that day?
I know.
You invited me into your home.
Yeah. I mean, it's a crazy idea. Yeah.
I knew what I was doing.
So you were at an Airbnb where you just had your own room.
Mm-hmm.
And how many other roommates were there?
A bunch. It was
Yeah.
Because I remember like reading a lot and feeling like, oh, I should be in like Williamsburg. I should be in that area. That's where all the good comedy is happening. And so I just picked a place that was like reasonable and in the Williamsburg area.
Were you specifically interested in the alt comedy scene or just kind of like progressive thinking comedy?
I had literally gone to the Knitting Factory once.
Uh-huh.
And this is when Hannibal was running it.
Yeah. We used to go every week.
It was amazing.
We used to go when it was free and it was
beautiful. Because I lived walking distance.
You saw some of the best comedy there. You still do. I mean, it's still a great show. I haven't been in a while.
Show.
But.
It is, but it really inspired me, as I'm sure it did you guys.
Yeah.
And I was just like, man, I want to be over here.
Yeah.
I want to be where this is happening.
And Hannibal was a comic who's just so fucking funny. And he's so calmly himself. And he just takes these turns that you don't expect. And I really love that about him. So, yeah.
Especially when he was hosting in Brooklyn. Like, he was prime Hannibal, really not censoring himself.
Well, it feels like you're watching. It feels that it's a beautiful part of comedy where you feel like you're watching something you're not supposed to be watching.
So
like you're really like, you were invited to this cool underground thing and only a couple of us know about it and don't tell anyone else and only cool people are let. Like it was a very special time.
It was. And with the big windows, people were walking by like, what's going on in there? People are just giggling.
If you don't know, you don't know.
Yeah, you can't just walk in here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it did feel like this like secret society, but like all like laughing in a room full of people you don't know. Like during those times when Hannibal was hosting the Knitting, it was magical.
It was incredible.
I'm glad you brought that up.
So I want to, I mean, obviously this is a sexuality podcast, but you have such an interesting, you had an interesting childhood that I only have heard about in little snippets. I had heard you speak on stage about like growing up in the foster care system.
Then
I know you just started a podcast. About being orphans. I don't know what words are okay to say anymore. I didn't know if like orphan was like prostitute or just like an old word that people aren't using.
Right.
Is that still the
word? Sounds old timey, right?
Sounds like Annie.
Like I'm probably gonna clean your chimney.
Right.
It's totally not.
As a child, like a child chimney.
The UN has a definition of an orphan.
Uh-huh.
And an orphan is a person who has lost one or more parent via death or abandonment.
One or more.
So a lot of people
are
literally orphans, considered orphans by the UN definition and don't realize it.
Oh,
so
I
we talk to people that are partially orphaned or quarterly orphan, like, oh, they text you or email you. You know, like there's
dad
various,
shows up once a year.
And like Shalewa, we asked Shalewa, she was one of our first guests. She recently became an orphan.
Yes,
yeah. So to be an adult and then and lose both of your parents, you're a new orphan at an adult age.
And I mean, what a mind fuck.
It is crazy.
All of it is a mind fuck.
It's crazy.
Damn.
Yeah. So it's daddyless issues. And we talk to people about like, how did they get by? Like, what tools did you use to parent yourself? Because that's what we do instinctively when we don't have someone there to provide that support. We develop methods to parent ourselves.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's kind of a great skill to have, especially in comedy where you kind of just are thrown in and you're on your own and you're like, I just need to not drown.
There's no manual really.
No, there isn't. So did you ever know your biological parents?
Yeah. I lived with my mom till I was two.
Okay.
And I got taken away from her. I didn't know who my father was. His name wasn't on my birth certificate.
Oh, wow.
I got taken away from her. And then she had visitation for like the next few years. But then I was living with my grandmother. Got taken away from her.
Was it your mom's mom?
My mom's mom. Okay. Got taken away from her.
Do you know why?
It was genuinely the 80s when people were just smoking crack in Philly and Camden.
Yeah.
And that's just what they were doing.
Yeah, that's just
what they were doing. And they just got caught up in the tail end when it's like, obviously they weren't on the streets. They were, you know, paying their rent and holding down jobs, but they were smoking crack. They were casually smoking crack. Definitely not taking care of their kids. You know?
Yeah.
Just definitely not doing that.
Okay.
So I got taken away from them. And then
Someone came by and was like, oh, she's smoking crack. Chanel, come with us.
It was the craziest thing.
Do you like secondhand crack smoke? Is that like a thing?
I hope not.
I didn't know if there was like any doctor pulled you aside ever and was like, nah.
I doubt it.
All right.
Still, you're probably not doing a great job. It's not great. You know?
Yeah. Probably not going to have like a full fridge or like a clean room.
Just not going to be on the up and up.
Yeah.
You know, you're just rolling through life. My grandmother was like really abusive. She was just like all of the bad things, like throwing me up against stuff. Just
at two?
At three. I lived with her between two and six. So I got taken away from my mom, put with my grandmother because she was like, obviously the only other person.
Right.
And she's just as fucked up, if not worse. And my grandmother was this like Jersey Italian woman. And I'm like her first black grandchild. And she's suddenly straddled with this child. And then my little brother is born.
Oh, okay. So your mom's white?
She's half white.
Half white? Okay.
Yeah. So it was just a lot of different things that I think made it hard for her to be a good grandmother. I mean, the crack is one thing. Yeah. That was a
part
of it.
Crack's not helping it.
But she was also like, oh, my daughter is strung out. Her kids got taken away. You know, she had a son that was in jail. Just like everything was swirling. And also, she was slapping us around a lot. So I went to the doctor one day and the doctor just... He just read her up and down. I'm sure we were a spectacle, but he knew instantly, like, oh, this lady's fucking these kids up. Like, this is all fucked up. So I went to school the next day and these people in suits told me to get in the car and we're like, we're going to go get your things and you don't have to live with your grandmother anymore.
How did you feel when they told you that?
It felt like I might pass out. It felt like my legs were going numb, you know?
In a good or a bad way or a scare?
In both ways. Like a relief of, oh my God, someone has... done their due diligence and maybe we have a chance, because at five and six I had settled into the idea that we're probably not going to survive this, you know? My mom is not getting it together. I don't know who my dad is. My grandmother is doing all types of crazy things. We're probably not going to make it out of this. And then my newborn brother was instantly taken from her and put into the care of my grandmother as well. So I remember being relieved, but also scared for her. Because, you know, you're seven. You don't really understand, like, what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So I remember thinking, like, in my child reasoning, oh, if they could just tell her you can't do that anymore, then maybe we'll be okay. Like, if they could just, like, pull her to the side and say, hey, you know, like, you can't really do all that stuff.
Cut it out with the crack. Maybe.
You know, throwing people.
keep the bills paid, you know, like, whatever. But, yeah.
What a pure... child, like that's just such a, if you tell them not to do the bad things,
just
they won't.
Stop doing that shit, because other times she was nice, she was fun, you know,
right?
So then we were in the system and I like lived with my teacher for a while. I lived with neighbors.
Was that all weird for you
people,
or?
Yeah, all these people really like came together and wanted to keep specifically me out of foster care.
Oh, that's
but
good.
You know, obviously they weren't prepared to take on another two kids, so it was like they were only able to do so much before we ended up in foster care and moving around a lot. But yeah, I lived in so many people's homes.
Wow.
And
what a wow. I my mom was in foster care for a little bit, and her mom tried to kill her and her siblings because they were threatened to take the kids away. So she tried to kill herself, and she tried to kill the kids, and she did, and then she eventually killed herself. But and it was the foster care. She didn't have not that great an experience, and she was so little, but she remembers it. Did you have that?
Oh man, I feel like I remember them each, like, in like I could write a book about each home.
Wow.
I feel like I remember them in such vivid detail, even when I was really young.
Damn.
For a lot of reasons, I always think about how race played an issue.
How
sometimes I would be in a home where it's a white family and they have children of their own who are white, and they literally don't want us fraternizing with their white children.
What because the fuck? So are they just taking you in for the money from the government?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Because it's like you hear so much negative things about the foster care system. And I always wonder, like, I'm guessing this is accurate.
And this is like pre-internet. People are not checking up as I'm sure they are now and keeping a case log like they are now and having the checks and balances. So there were times when I was like, God, come on, these people shouldn't have kids. Like, the way that they're taking care of their own children is not that great. Now you're adding us into the mix and it's becoming this really swirling thing of just horrible childhoods.
Did you know when you were that young, like, oh, you're fucked up and you're racist and it's nothing to do with who I am as a person.
And sometimes it would be like mom was really racist, but I could tell that the dad wasn't racist. He was just kind of going along with it because she was a really fat lady that ran his life, you know, like that. She just ran the household and she was like, we're racist. We're taking in kids.
Here we are.
But
we're racist.
This is how we're going to do it. You married
me.
Don't talk to my white kids.
Damn.
Make them sleep over there. Like and when she was gone, he was nice. He was calm.
Wow.
And he was compassionate, but it was like he was more than willing to just accept that was his life. Like, he married this woman and this is what they do and they live in Jersey. What are you gonna do? You know,
would the kids go along with this kind of racism, or would they just be kids and colorblind? Or I'm not sure how old they were as kids.
Honestly, they were pretty colorblind. I felt like it was never like these kids, like the kids would ask questions as if like, why do they sleep over there? Or why don't they have actual beds? Why are we giving them cots? Like,
they were much more,
they were much, especially like, I remember always if they had a daughter, then me and the daughter would become friends. Mm-hmm. And it would always be like, well, Chanel should have this too. Or Chanel should have her, you know, whatever. But it's like, it's easy to justify not doing things for a foster kid when you say like, well, we don't know how long she's going to be here.
Mm. So it's like, they put it under that mask.
Or I imagine there's sometimes people will be like, well, they're just lucky to have a home at all. Yeah. Kind of that attitude.
Well, she can play with your stuff, you know, when you're not using it. Like all types of things that they can make it seem like, well, we're doing the best we can.
And know when they're placing foster children in homes, I mean, do they account for race at all? I mean, like, I know this is a different example, but like for Big Brothers Big Sisters program, for instance, like I worked on that and they really wanted to place people with people of the same race so that you could have kind of an older person in your life who really like looked like you on the outside. Yeah. And they felt that was important.
Yeah.
Did they at all try that? Or
not that I know of. I'm actually curious, like nowadays, how much research they do and like what their methods are, because it definitely felt like who had space at the time. It felt like we moved when this home was getting crowded or these people were deciding that they didn't want to have as many kids. Like we just went where there was space.
And how up until what age were you going from?
Until I was 18, but I lived with like distant relatives in between if they had space.
Nice.
But yeah, definitely. I remember thinking of like 18 as like the get out of jail card. Once I get there, I'll be able to figure it out. I'll be able to, you know, I remember being super focused on college and just like powering through high school and just being so driven about that specific goal. Like, you have to go start your life and be an accountable adult so that you can help your brother, so that you can, you know.
Damn, you parented yourself really well.
Yeah, I was gonna say, where did that even come from?
Oh man, I mean, I definitely did a couple bouts of therapy. I definitely spoke to professionals.
Within, provided by the government,
I remember when I was in fifth grade, I told my teacher. I just told my teacher, I was like, yeah, you know, life is just heavy and I need to talk to somebody. Like, you know, I'm taking care of this baby.
You have like a very like deep artist spirit. It seemed like that all kind of.
Crazy that it's that way now, but at the time it just felt like you just gotta survive. Like,
yeah,
you just gotta figure it out. If not even for me, because I can't say that I was super motivated. I just remember feeling like I'm gonna be a direct example for my little brother, I don't want him to ever say, "Well, Chanel failed at life. Look, she's a vagabond. Mm. She does tax scams." Like, whatever it is,
right.
She just bailed out. You know, like whatever it is that she's doing.
Yeah.
I could do that too and just not try hard. I was like, I'm going to try as hard as possible so that he can never have an excuse about not even giving his best.
Yeah. So it's like you've already gone through motherhood.
Totally. Yeah. That's why I know I'm not ready for kids anytime soon. I'm still exhausted from raising that
kid. You already did it.
I'm tired.
How old is your brother now?
22.
Okay. He's doing well?
Yeah, he's doing well. He's in college.
He had a good person raising him.
Yeah. I honestly worry about him way more than I should. Because you know what? Like, you wake up in the middle of the night, you want to text him a paragraph about like credit card limits. Like, just,
yeah,
you just want to like, warn him.
Yeah, I know, probably have told you this.
And every time I do that and like kind of, I don't want to say spaz on him, but freak out on him a little bit, he's always like, oh, I know, I actually was reading about that. And I had, you know, like he's even a better version of me, so aww, that he's better, like, suited.
But it makes sense, because then you really did have that, that is reflective of like the parent child
yeah
relationship. Yeah. I mean, that's why I can't even be a parent, because I would just be worried sick all the time. Like, yeah, I couldn't even function.
I do worry. I do. But he's doing good.
So when you turned 18, you just was on that day, did they say, well, leave? Were you at a foster house?
I was living with a distant relative at the time.
Oh, okay. So you didn't have to leave.
Yeah, I didn't have to leave right away, but I definitely wanted to. I wanted to, like, go get started right away. And so, yeah, I, like, bought a plane ticket. I moved to Philly. I went to Temple.
Why Philly? Just for school or?
Yeah, well, I liked, obviously, I was like from that area, so I always liked the city. Mm-hmm. And I just had this idea of like being Sex in the City and just going to college in the city. And I just wanted to, I was like, it sounds good. It sounds like a good school and I just want to go there.
Yeah.
I really don't remember having like a ton of specific ideas about who I was going to be or what I was going to do. I was just like, I'm going to start over here.
How did you learn about sex?
Oh, man. A lot of movies.
Okay.
Tons of movies. I feel like I spent a lot of time like in front of a TV when no one was around.
Okay.
Like,
so I felt monitoring
a lot of like, yeah. So a lot of like people just not being home and me exploring HBO.
And in an overcrowded house, like a TV does often do so much parenting mm-hmm. on its own.
Totally. Like, you know, real sex.
Yeah.
All day.
Yeah.
The playhouse all day.
Yeah.
Just really studying like, who are these women and why are they doing this? You know, mm-hmm. but I was deathly afraid of like pregnancy when I was like in my adolescence. I feel like I was a slow starter because I was like, man, my mom and my dad were totally not ready for me. Right. They were totally not ready. I'm not trying to make that same mistake. This thing is like a ticking time bomb. Just
your
don't,
womb?
Yeah, I was like worried that my womb would just get too close to a guy and maybe I'd be like, oh,
I contracted pregnancy.
Damn.
Yeah.
Fear is a very powerful emotion.
So it kept me like good. I was a good girl for a long time, but you know.
Not even like a finger anywhere? Or?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Okay. Just no anything.
Penetrative I'm not
trying
sex.
To, I'm not trying to make a baby, but
yeah.
I got like my first boyfriend when I was like 16 and still I was like, oh, we really got to take it slow, bro. Like, I'm not trying to make a baby out here. But then after that, I think I was pretty normal.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it's cool. You can just like make sure you don't make a baby. Okay.
Yeah. Condoms, birth control, all that stuff.
You know, because I remember watching that movie Kids.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And just being like scared to hell.
Yeah. Like, well, that movie will scare the shit out of you if you watch it young, especially.
And then like when my mom was like trying to get clean, going with her to like NA meetings.
Oh, and why you would
people,
go with her?
Yeah. Watching people man. Like share in those meetings and talk about like sex and like literally how they got AIDS or they contracted HIV and now have AIDS and then watching them deteriorate. So I remember from a young age being like,
wow,
oh, that's a real thing that's out there. Yeah. You have to be so careful. So I was like really careful.
Wow.
For
in a way that, do you think it limited you or it was a healthy amount of careful?
I think so, yeah. I think I was like, oh, sex with a condom is pretty solid, right?
Yeah.
It's just, we can't get that much better, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, no, there's a big difference. And it's not something that you can justify with logic and conversation.
Well, that's
you know?
Like a metaphysical thing almost. It's like a...
But even like when you're like genuinely in love with someone, I just feel like there's such a big difference in a lovemaking session if you're wrapping it up still.
I'm still wrapping it up because I'm off birth control, but I've been with my boyfriend for 7 years and I do like it when we like do it raw dog, but it's very rare and because he's very paranoid about the pregnancy thing. Mm. And I don't know. It's just as good.
Maybe
what I tell myself though.
We talk about this.
I appreciate what I got.
Like, I agree with you. I mean,
okay. I was gonna say I need someone else to.
No, I 100% agree with you. I just don't like to talk about it too much for the kids. You know, all the 12-year-olds listening. But
the little baby.
But you know, that's only it if I'm in a committed relationship, obviously, because then otherwise I don't want to have a baby with someone I don't know.
Totally.
So true. Yeah.
I mean, that's the main thing because I do also still at 32 have a intense fear of of pregnancy.
Same.
Maybe even worse when you're 30s, because then you're like, well, I guess that it, now I gotta,
I gotta lame to get an abortion.
I gotta
30s?
Keep it or just decide that I'm not having kids. I feel like that's the 32-year-old decision,
because
like,
it's hard to justify a mistake.
One and done. Yeah.
At this age, it's hard to justify.
But we can
it,
still
right?
make mistakes.
You can still make mistakes. I think it's just like, you know, like, oh, you're like every, you know, it's just like,
you're gonna force yourself
rotting
to it
in there, and you're just, even though it's not, I mean, you can, in this day and age, you can have a baby, well, like 40, 42.
Totally.
Max, maybe. I don't know. Definitely 40. Depends how things are going.
It's like, what's your health insurance like?
Yeah. You're just having a conversation with yourself.
Well, no, I don't have any.
So, is it, so like, in throughout the foster care system, did any of the moms ever have any kind of talk about you? Or like, what's your getting in your first period? Like, who the fuck tampon
helps you with that?
I remember that home that I was living in, I got my period. I remember going to my neighbor because she was a mom.
Which home were you in? The one with the white kids? They separated you?
No, this was a biracial family, actually. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I remember, like, they hadn't been home in a while. Like, they weren't, I wasn't seeing them very often.
Went on vacation?
They were just living their lives. They were just not checking in on us. Like,
I mean, it's like living in an Airbnb.
Sometimes it was. Sometimes they were very busy, and they just knew that if there was food in the house, they could just not be home.
Oh, God.
So I remember going to the neighbor. It was like a mom of three. And I remember she was a military woman, always really, really nice to me. And I just was like, hey, there's blood.
You literally knocked on the door?
Yeah. I was just like, hey, there's blood. I don't know. I think it's probably that thing. But I also remember
that
being
is such
kind
a
of
chill reaction to getting your
I
period.
Remember being kind of coy because I knew what it was, but I also didn't want to get in the conversation of how I knew, because I felt like, I don't know, I had read a book. I don't know.
Yeah.
I felt like I had read a book about, oh, I remember reading like The Color Purple.
Oh.
And she, seeing her like define what her period was like. And I was like, that sounds fucking horrible. You know?
Yeah.
Damn. So
very dramatic.
But yeah, she like took me to the store and bought me some pads, and then.
Oh
yeah, she was like, she checked on me, like I was like, oh, you know, and I was like,
oh, it's good someone was, damn.
Yeah. But I remember from a young age always feeling comfortable like asking someone for help if I really needed it.
That's awesome, because I feel like that so many people live their lives never allowing themselves to be comfortable asking for help, which is, because I was gonna ask, like, who did you lean on? Because you were the rock for your brother.
Yeah.
The families didn't seem to really give a shit or be around.
I felt like I kind of had like a rotating list of people in my life, like a good teacher, or, you know, maybe if I was on drill team, a good coach. So I just kind of, I kept people in my life if I felt like they were influencing me in a positive way, and just allowed me to talk to them about things. Like, does this person let me lean on them? Can I really talk to them about what's really happening?
You might be the most mentally stable person I've ever met in my life.
Oh, it's mostly weed. It's like a lot. I don't want you getting too high thinking I'm out here zen all the time. Like, life is stressful, but
so stressful.
I'm totally committed to moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, and that's super important.
And that we talk about that on my podcast all the time. Like, that's, all these orphans have one thing in common, and that's their ability to keep moving forward.
Yeah. You know? And that's human spirit and strength. Yeah. And either it's a choice to go lean into it or not. So that's great. That's
Are you awesome. In any groups where like you talk to other orphans? Like, I have this like online thing. I love online groups.
Yeah.
And so I just,
I'm not, but I should be, because I am curious. Like, sometimes people will ask me like, well, are you like other orphans? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't really hang out with that many, I don't think.
Right.
But I don't know. They should be. They should have some meetups.
Yeah. Orphans meet up. Yeah. That's a good website. Coin it.
That would be. Yes. I like that. Huh. And now, and then you got into Temple. Temple's a great school.
Yeah.
I imagine you were moving from different school systems a lot, or were you moving within the same school system?
Sometimes. Like, I lived in a lot of cities in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I was able to like just transfer to something that was on the outskirts. But
did you ever live in Union?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay. That's where I'm from.
Is
I was just curious.
North
it's like, maybe? It's like, it's middle. It's middle to north. It's right. Like 35 minutes with no traffic from the city.
Oh, okay.
But I was like, oh, maybe you, and so how did you, was it just taken upon yourself to keep up with your schoolwork and like, what's changing schools like so many times, like going through this like process of like being the new kid time and time again? Yeah.
That was challenging. I think I, for a long time, kept to myself for a while. Mm-hmm. But I will say that there were a lot of programs that helped me specifically because of my situation. Mm. I remember being in a program in junior high that was called something Reach or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they used to meet with us, I would say, every month and go over the A through G requirements, which are the classes you need to take to get into college.
Yeah.
So they drilled us with that information. Like, they
That's
would take
good to
us
hear.
All the time. And it was specifically, I remember the other kids that used to meet with us in that group were like, their parents were divorced and someone was like out of the home, something where they felt they had a disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
So I will say that a lot of programs helped me. I got a lot of financial aid. I got a lot of scholarships for just writing my story down.
Oh, that's nice. Great.
And sending it to someone saying, hey, here's what I'm dealing with and I'm trying to get into college, and them just sending Temple a grand or something uh-huh. like that. So yeah, there were a lot of really good resources that helped me be proactive so that I was a little more prepared to just jump out into adulthood.
That's fucking rad. So how is sex and dating for you now? Like,
it's chill. It's chill, but I always say it's hard as a comedian. Like, don't you think so?
Because
the hours.
You got it. Dating comedians. That's why dating comedians make sense.
Totally.
Because they get it. They're not going to be like, well, you're never around. Like, there's no question there.
It's hard for me to imagine not dating someone who's in entertainment in some way.
Yeah.
Just because they totally understand what's happening. Like, if you look at the calendar and it's like, oh, there's 30 days on this calendar, I'm going to be sleeping somewhere else 14 days out of this month.
Right. Yeah.
And then these other nights that I'm actually here in the city, I have 10 shows. So it's like,
yeah, you're out till midnight, you know, the earliest. Mm-hmm.
So I think when I first started, it was like, once I started going on tour, I was immediately getting caught up. Just trying to date someone at home casually and then going on tour and just like meeting someone and thinking, oh, maybe I could just also date this person.
Do you get road booty? Because like, I feel like just like
road booty.
Yeah. Being like, I hate even like road saying ass. Female comic because I hate separating. But like that is the one thing where it's like, I feel like female comedians, like
no dick after the show.
No, anything after the show.
I can't say the guys maybe are like, high. Yo, you're trying to like get it in. But they're like, yo, I want to take you out.
What?
They're like, yo, I want to take you out. Like, I want to, when's awesome. The next time you're around? I would like to take you out. And sometimes it's hard, like, when they really proposition you in a way that sounds super genuine, like, oh, no, I've, like, researched you, and I knew that you were coming, and then I met you.
Wow.
And now I really want to take you out. And it's like,
they put so much work into it.
Yeah. And I remember one time
has that happened multiple times?
More than once, yeah.
Oh, damn. Mm-hmm.
See, this is something about you.
Yeah.
You're like, a unique person.
Because there seems to be this pattern in your story of these of just people kind of like
attracting these people are good.
Like it's like this. Yeah. So you're realizing you are unique or special and just giving you that little bit extra.
Yeah. I can say it's like a dopeness recognizing dopeness. Mm. Sometimes.
Yeah.
It's
very interesting.
That's great.
Because it's usually someone who's like pretty dope. I'm like, damn, you want to go
Shit.
Out? Like you've made all this dope stuff already. You want to hang out with me? But I remember going to Chicago and doing a show like earlier in my career and staying out in Chicago for a while, meeting a guy at a show, and then by happenstance meeting him at a house party.
Oh,
like
whoa.
With some people that I knew, and then being like, oh, he really wants to go out. Like, he really propositioned me. Let's just go out. And so the guy that I was dating back home was a musician, and he was traveling as well. And he just
shows
up. Were
you guys exclusive?
We were pretty exclusive. We weren't like boyfriend and girlfriend, but we were...
Headed there,
texting,
very obviously.
Texting
headed there.
All day. You're okay. In my life. You know what's happening. Yeah. So I was definitely being sneaky, trying to go on a date.
Yeah.
And he texted me. I was like, guess what? I'm in Chicago too. And I was like, oh no. And I was like actively on a date with another guy that I had just met in Chicago. And so I thought I could be slick about it. And was like, well, let's just meet for a drink. Like, where are you? And he was like, oh, I'm at this bar. I told the guy to drop me off near the bar. I'm like, just drop me off around the corner and I'll walk around.
Yeah.
I just tell him an address. And we get there and he's like, oh, there's a bar around the corner. I really like, I'm going to stop in there and go to the bathroom.
Oh,
and I'm like, great. You know what, though? You can't even park over here. It's real crazy. You should go park over there. I'm going to run inside because I got to pee too. So it was like literally trying to juggle with these two guys that I've now brought from two different cities.
Yeah.
To the same
bar.
And now I'm trying to juggle to get one in and out from the bathroom so that I can have
Mrs. Doubtfire.
It was, I remember faking a phone call in front of the bathroom, like telling the guy, like, you should go. I'm on the phone with my manager. Like, you should get out of here. And I was like, who are
getting
you?
A role, whatever. It's
who fine. Are you? What have you become? You're supposed to be doing comedy out
Did
here.
Did you pull it off, though?
Totally pulled it off.
Damn.
Uh-oh, until they listen to this.
Yeah. They'll have feelings, but.
Are you single now?
I'm dating.
Okay, dating. Oh yeah, that's right. Okay. Yeah. Cool. All right. So it's, you know,
chilling. It's not as hard now because you just can't be sneaky.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you just got to keep it real.
Have you been sneaky in the past? Like in a, cause that's not that sneaky. I mean, to me, I'm like, it's kind of funny. It's like sly.
It is. I was trying to be a little sly. I was, but I think that it's hard being a lady comic because guys don't always trust the situation that you're in anyway. Like I go to comedy clubs late at night. I drink a bunch.
Yeah. You hang out with guys.
I smoke weed with in alleys with comedians some of them are kind of like funny. Some of them are like cheeky, you know, whatever. Yeah. So it's like guys immediately get insecure and they worry that, you know, you're just being swept up off your feet every night. And it's hard to be like, no, like,
have you met comedians?
I promise. I just want to hang out with us one night.
Like, yeah. I just like being around
these
people.
Well, the hang is part of the scene. It's part of being a comedian.
I just think that regular guys struggle to accept that part of like dating a comedian, especially dating a woman, because they're like, what are you doing? You're standing behind this comedy club at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
With these guys. You guys are just talking. Come on, get out of here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So you've had trouble getting regular people.
Yeah.
Understand.
Just trying to be like, this is what I remember one time dating a guy and then meeting Jill Scott's band.
Mm-hmm. Oh, whoa.
Like meeting her band at my show.
Damn.
And then them.
They came to your show?
Yeah. They so happened to come to the show.
Oh.
And they were like, you're amazing. Like, you were so great. Let's go hang out. So I brought them back to my house.
Oh my God.
And I'm like drinking with Jill Scott's band. It's so chill.
That's such a dream. Yeah.
The guy that I'm dating at the time, like, he hears the commotion from upstairs. He comes downstairs and looks at me like, you're a fucking slut.
Wait, did he live in your building?
No, he was just staying the night. He was staying the night.
Okay. He was in the upstairs.
He was staying the night. Mm-hmm.
Wait, did he say that?
Yeah, well, no, but he looked at me like that. And I remember him asking me.
You know.
Yeah. Just like when they give you that up and down, like, ugh, you're dirty.
Yeah,
to
the
me now.
Judgy fucking.
Yes.
Oh,
and
God,
I was like, come
so
on, like, we're just smoking and like chilling.
Just
like,
God's band.
Put on your pants, come hang out with us.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, I don't want to hang out with you. Like, you weren't just smoking. You don't look like you were just smoking. And I was like, come on, man.
I mean, what are you giving everyone blowjobs?
I mean, what are you doing?
I gave all of them blowjobs, like, but now it's your turn. It's
classically trained musicians. Like, come on, man. We're at a jazz bar. Nothing crazy was happening, but like he just couldn't wrap his mind around like it was just what it was.
Huh.
And now I bet you he probably wants to hang out with Jill Scott's band and he can't.
He probably would love to. He never knew. Did he ever know that was Jill Scott's band?
That's the first thing I said.
Oh.
I was like, hey, chill out. It's Jill Scott's band. Like,
yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, I was going to say. Like,
put your pants on. Come hang out with us. And he was just like, no, absolutely not.
Oh,
I'm not
God.
Going down there. Stubborn. I don't want to talk to any of them. I don't know what you guys were doing.
Oh my God. So have you dated a lot of comics?
Two.
Okay.
Yeah. In Philly.
In Philly.
Yeah. Not in New York.
Did it go poorly?
Totally. No worst. The
I always
first
think
guy
about
I dated what? When I was tired of dating him, he got very angry. He would just show out at shows.
It was, so you dumped, did you dump him and then he would show up?
It was like we were dating and I was like, I don't want to date anymore.
Yeah.
Which I think is an easy conversation to have.
Yeah.
But no.
He did not want to hear it.
His ego was like, I will block you on everything. And then when I see you at shows,
show up
I'll show up at the show, but not talk to you.
That's such a strange move. The showing up and not talking.
Distancing yourself internetly, but then showing up personally.
Comedians love to get attention for purposely not giving you attention. Like, hey, look,
that
I'm not even checking
shit.
For you. I didn't even know you were going to be here.
I hate that power. Power moves freak me out and they like scare me a little bit because I'm like, what are you capable of? I do not know.
Yeah, it's scary.
Yeah. Have you ever been in a situation with a guy that you were like, is this going to go very awry, either violent or,
oh man,
well, rapey or.
I don't want to scare you when I tell you about this, but there was this comedian that I knew in Philly that would come to all my shows and sit in the back with a bouquet of flowers. And
Wait
until I got off stage and then he'd ask to walk me home and I'd say,
walk you home.
Yeah. And I'd say, no, thank you. And he would hand me the flowers and then he'd leave. And he did that for months.
So many,
how many
flowers.
As many as I had.
Holy
as many
fuck.
As I had. He would show up. And I'm talking like sometimes, and this was a white guy too. Sometimes I would be doing shows.
That's even scarier.
I would
white
be doing
guys
shows
are capable
in the hood.
Shit.
I was going to say, I was like,
shows.
I had actually no question that it was a white guy.
Yeah.
That's
right. That is some white guy shit.
Serial killer move.
I would be doing shows in the hood. And he would be sitting in the audience very calmly with his little backpack and his flowers. And the comedians would roast him. they would pick him out. Like, look at this guy. He's got this bag. Sweet. He's probably gonna like.
What vibe did you get from him when he said hi to you? Here's the flowers.
He was inept. He could barely speak. Like he
Do you think he just had like Asperger's?
Yeah,
or
I was gonna say maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So wait, did he ever? So
did you feel threatened?
Not really, but that's probably me just being arrogant. Like, oh, you know, he's a little shorter than me. So I know I could take him.
Yeah. But also, too, like, I feel like if he had that, like, serial killer white guy vibe, you feel like that's a gut.
I mean, even when I moved to New York, this comedian that I know in Philly, who's like one of my good girlfriends, she told me that, or she sent me a screenshot of him messaging her saying, do you have Chanel's address in New York City? I want to send her some flowers.
That guy, the same guy,
didn't he notice the flowers weren't working?
No.
How did he get your friend's phone number?
No, he hit her up on Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook.
Okay, so but the thing with this is, okay, so I can understand the gesture, but it's like previously to the flowers or afterwards, did he ever express in like written or verbal words what it is he was looking for? Like what else did he say?
I remember meeting him at a few shows and speaking to him like in the same way that we do at the end of a show, just everybody hanging out.
Right.
And him just being like, yo, I really dig you. I really like you. You know, you're dope. And then I remember thinking, like, I saw him a few more times and he was like, actually, I love you. I love you.
And then what'd you say?
And I was just like, you don't even know me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then immediately was like, well, you should get away from me because, you know, I don't know what this is. I don't know what this is becoming, but let's just stop it because you don't even know me. You don't know me. And then he was like, well, I'm just going to show you. I'm going to show you how much I love you and I'll just go to all your shows.
Did he ever ask you out on an actual date or just say that he loved you?
He would just say that he loved me.
Did you ever ask him to not come to your shows? Or you never felt the need to?
I'm sure I did, but I probably didn't say it as heavy-handedly.
Okay.
I remember the one time that I was heavy-handedly. I remember he messaged me on Facebook something like probably nice, probably not anything too crazy. And I remember writing him back and being like, you got to stop hitting me up like we're friends.
Right.
Because we're not. We're not friends.
Yeah.
And he screenshotted that and he put it on Instagram. And like everybody in the Philly scene obviously saw it. And I was like, come on, man. Like now you're, that was the first time I saw him kind of like act out that I was like, oh, no.
Yeah,
like, I'm really going to block you on everything. Like I know it was just like a fan thing before and you weren't really whatevering, but now it's ugly and I don't want any parts.
But people must have understood that like he was the one acting erratically.
Totally. Oh, yeah. But I do think that some people in the scene didn't take it seriously when I would say, like, hey, this guy kind of makes me uncomfortable. Like,
well,
don't.
Womanhood.
Maybe,
yeah.
Because they're like, wait, why? That's so weird.
And I remember people being like, well, you walked into the show and we were talking to him. And when you walked in, he started acting really weird. Like, we couldn't understand what was happening. He just was like looking at you a lot and being really weird. And I was like, yeah. So why do you keep booking us together then?
Yeah,
you saw that it's weird thing. It's a weird thing that he's doing. So like, don't book him on this show.
Yeah.
Huh.
Damn. And when was the last time you had contact with him?
Honestly, probably before I moved. I haven't heard from him since. Other than the last that I heard was that he had asked my friend for my address.
Mm-hmm.
And that she was like, no.
Scary. But do you post where you're doing shows and stuff? Like,
I mean, I do. Totally. That's why
you have to.
My website has my shows all the time.
Yeah.
A guy could come to a show.
Anybody could. Yeah.
You know. We always think about that.
I know. Always.
Well, on the podcast, like, I was like, whatever. You know, if you want to murder us, this is where we'll be.
From 7:30 to 9:30.
Yeah. It's not
a secret.
I'll
be a little intoxicated. No, it's just like, I have to keep my wits about me regardless. But definitely that guy gave me.
That is really strange, man.
Put my foot down and be like, no, this is unacceptable. You're not going to have any contact with me at all.
Did he take that?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't heard from him. After telling him that day when he posted that screenshot, after being like, come on, bro, like this is.
Yeah, that's a fucking line
crazy. Now this is crazy because I wasn't even being mean.
Yeah.
I was just being like, come on, stop hitting me up. Like, we're not friends. And I was just like, no, because if this is how you're going to start acting, I know you're only going to get more angry.
Yeah. This is the colors you're showing me this early.
Yeah.
Damn.
I got like supreme survivor skills, I think.
You really do. I'm glad he stopped. He leaving you the fuck alone.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Have you ever had to use the survivor skills in any other way as it relates to relationships or sex or dating?
Yeah, I think that specifically when I was in those foster homes, I feel like sometimes I had to like decide that I was just going to placate with someone versus like being real or going against what they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's helped a ton, even in entertainment. Like sometimes you have to have a conversation with someone and you need to talk about a business aspect, but they're a crazy person and you need to just placate and be a part of this. Like I remember doing a show for Bill Bellamy way back in the day, and he had these crazy groupies with him.
Crazy
groupies.
He's got groupies.
And then I remember doing a show with or trying to get on a show with Tommy Davidson and it being like that green room was a psych ward for a couple of minutes. It was so crazy. He was asking me like, should I do a feature on this Philly rapper's album? He wants me to do something on his album. And I was like, Tommy Davidson, why are you asking me for advice?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get a guest spot on your show. You know?
It's amazing how high up the food chain you can get with comedians and they still seemingly feel so lost. I've had that experience so many times. And it's jarring as a more up and coming comedian because you're just like, well, what the fuck? Does this when ever get better? And also then it ruptures this thought of them that you have as this like, you know, star and someone who has it all together. And because, you know, comedians are like, you know, wisdom relayers in a lot of ways. I mean, I use artists as, I don't want to say my gods, but certainly as like spiritual guides, authors and musicians and comedians more than I do any real religion.
Yeah.
So then I'm like, well, what, now that I know you're an idiot, what am I supposed to do? Or now that I know that you're lost, how I can't use you as my guide any longer.
I remember meeting so many celebrities and being like, you're all fucked up.
Yeah. It's really
an interesting experience to see somebody that you put on that pedestal and you're like, oh, you don't know what the fuck you're doing either.
Like, you're all fucked up.
Yeah.
It's sad. But I always like, in the same way that I say I have like so many survivor skills, I'm always trying to pay attention to people that make mistakes right before me.
Yeah, that's smart.
Even with comedy, like when I'm watching someone on stage make a mistake and I'm thinking, oh, that's, you know, I'm happy that I'm paying attention now because I don't want to make that same mistake.
Yeah.
But also in like just being in entertainment, like watching people blast a relationship all over Instagram or talk about it a bunch in their jokes and then lose that person and then talk about that a bunch in their jokes. Like,
so they're just living for material.
The cycles, and I'm like, oh, okay, this is good that I get to watch some of these things. So that I don't have you ever talked
sometimes about it works out.
Yeah. Have you ever talked to us about a significant other on stage and it not go well?
No.
Okay, that's good.
It's been hilarious.
Yeah.
Meaning every time I've
not
done
going
it
well because the person's feelings were hurt.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Not like going over well with the
totally
audience.
I used to have this joke about, I think it was a joke about if I ever met Drake, how I would like fuck him real crazy. Like I would ruin his career because I would break his heart and then he would make a really sad album and every time guys would listen to it, they would cry. And when I was working out that
you
joke,
you would ruin Drake.
Just ruin him. With and then pussy. He would produce this amazing art. So it's like a sacrifice.
Yeah.
It's me sacrificing. Let me just go break him off real quick so that we can have this art. And I remember the guy that I was dating at the time, when he first heard that joke, he was really mad about it. He was like, that's, you know, you're just up there talking about fucking Drake. And yeah, I was like, I didn't even say fucking. I was like, I wasn't even explicitly saying that. I was just saying I would break his heart. You're assuming that I would fuck the shit out of him, which I would.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying that.
That's also true.
That's
was
just
not specified.
The joke. I'm just joking.
I never understand when like a real human being you're dating and that you know is mad over like a celebrity that you don't know and hypothetically being in love with or fucking them. Like it truly
you
makes
might meet Drake,
no
though.
Sense. Even
totally,
I mean,
I'm totally gonna meet
such
Drake.
A stretch.
I'm absolutely gonna meet Drake, but I'm also gonna be fine. Like it's not gonna be like, well, I gotta fulfill this prophecy because
you're not gonna be like Drake. Okay. I got a bit about you, and it's my truth. So
now that I met you,
what are you gonna do?
Yeah, it's amazing, like, being a comedian and telling people that you're a comedian and then showing people that you're a comedian and then them still not understanding the concept of a joke.
Yeah.
You're like, well, but this is what I do professionally.
And I'm not willing to have too many conversations about that.
Like, yeah, no,
if you're,
for
if
sure.
If I'm dating you and you're mad about a joke that I've told, first we have to acknowledge that I was literally joking. Mm-hmm. I was not being serious. I was telling a joke. And once we acknowledge that, I'm only going to maybe exchange two or three sentences about this joke.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't real, you know?
And when you have to like exaggerate or heighten certain aspects of like a story or something that happened and then people don't get that, I'm like, obviously I know you didn't do that, but for the premise of the bit, you got it. There's got to be some fantastical fiction going on here for my end.
I'm in the joke business.
Yeah.
When did you know you wanted to be in the entertainment business?
I didn't try stand up until right after I graduated college.
Uh-huh.
So like a year after, out of Temple. But I think I always knew it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think even as a little kid, I always wanted to watch comedy movies. I loved Wanda Sykes.
Right.
I used to think she was so amazing. And I just really wasn't, I was so focused on getting a good job and going to school and all those things that I wasn't willing to like even try an art thing. Like any type of art, I was like, you don't have time to go.
Well, art always feels like extra. And that's, mm-hmm. I think, so crappy in the school system because you're like, oh, that's like if I have time or if I did everything else. Like art is like this weird dessert. Like yeah. I can if I'm finished with everything else. When really, like, I should have just been doing this shit the whole time. And mm-hmm. why did I even sit in math class? It was a waste of everyone's time. I wasn't good at it.
And even when I was a little girl, if I wanted to like, I would dream about acting. I was just like, you don't have anybody that's going to take you to the shit and get your pictures. And you're like, you just can't even think like that. But then I got out on my own and I tried stand up and I was like, I think maybe I can think like that. Like maybe I have enough knowledge now to give it a good run for it. And I also don't have anybody to disappoint.
That's true.
That nobody's checking in on me. Like, are you still doing
orphan's motto?
Because you know what? A lot of people
nobody
live their life
nobody's
for
worried.
Their parents or somebody who might be disappointed.
And that's a disconnect sometimes with me and even dating.
That's a little bit of a freedom in that.
Yeah.
In that you're not prisoner to anybody's.
All these decisions are mine. They're just my decisions, and I have to live with myself and say, hey, you did that.
Yeah,
you know?
You
gotta
own
and
up.
Now your life is this way.
Yeah, because
you did that.
It's so funny. We've been sitting here, you know, for 4 years doing this podcast, and so often a running theme is like, wow, people's parents fuck them up
so bad.
Make
hard.
Me not even want kids now
because they fuck them up so bad.
Totally. Yeah, so it's like, do you think your parents fucked you up more by not being there, or do you think they would have fucked you up more by continuing to be there when they were not really doing the job that you needed them to do?
I think they genuinely weren't ready.
Mm-hmm.
My mom was just really not in a good place. And I think that I wouldn't be this person. I don't think I would be this person and have this knowledge if I would have had to have been subjected to how fucked up they were.
And it probably makes you a great stand-up. Because like younger like aged comedians, mm-hmm. it's like, you got to live life. You got to get your heart broken. You got to see some fucked up shit.
Yeah.
And then you have some material. You've had material since you were 8.
And I wasn't as scared, I feel like, in the beginning. Because it was like, oh, well, if these people don't like you, you know, you still got parents. You know, like, you guys will be fine.
Right. Yeah.
I'm going to go out here on my own still and have to, this is just every day.
Yeah. Are you back in contact with your mother now?
I actually saw her for the first time a few months ago at a funeral.
Oh, did you know she was going to be there ahead of time?
I had a feeling she probably would be there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
How was she doing?
I always say that, like, she was diagnosed with like bipolar disorder. And paranoia, schizophrenia, but it's, to my knowledge, what she is kind of like what's left from when you do that to yourself, you know?
Yeah.
So I just have never been able to have a real conversation with her. And she drifts off into space, you know? And it just never feels like she doesn't know I'm a comedian. She has no idea where I live, what I do, where I've been, you know?
She doesn't ask, or you ask and it doesn't stay, or you tell her and it doesn't stay. Or?
She doesn't ask, or she can't really comprehend. And I don't know, it's like a shell of a person.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely a cloud, but I have her phone number now. And I think intermittently she'll probably text for the holidays. But it's this weird thing where like, I want to protect myself so much that I'm not even really concerned with.
You've gotten this far on your own.
Like, I don't ever find myself wanting like, oh, I wish she hit me up more, or I wish you checked up on me, because I don't ever know what that felt like.
Right.
So
I'm super
comfortable in this existence.
Wow. That seems very calming and like a, I don't know. It does seem like a Zen way to live, that you had no choice. That's what your circumstances were. But I feel like that, do you ever have, I feel like everyone has mommy or daddy issues like so hard. Like, I have mommy issues so bad. And do you ever like listen to a friend like discuss or really dive into how fucked up their parents made them? And then you go, what the fuck?
Like, totally. Like,
it's probably very foreign to you.
It is. And I think sometimes when even comedians are like, well, I'm not going to go to California for that week, like I said, because my parents were like getting on my case about money or bills or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm always like, that sounds so crazy to me. I'm like, I don't understand that feeling of, well, I have to make decisions for myself and also make them feel a certain way about those decisions.
Yeah.
So even with dating, sometimes I feel like a guy could say to me like, well, my mom wants me to come for Thanksgiving, and I could be like, oh, cool, that's whatever. And he'd be like, well, you should come. And sometimes I might, but if I don't want to, like, I genuinely don't want to.
Yeah, you're not trying to be a dick. You're just like,
I feel like sometimes guys will be like, oh, I just don't understand.
They would get offended over that.
Yeah, I don't understand why you would rather not. And I'm like, it's, you know,
it's nothing against you.
It's about what I feel and what I want to do today. And today I don't want to.
You have a very healthy level of it seems, of not selfishness, because I feel like that word gets such a negative connotation, but like just self-care.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you really put a priority on that.
Totally.
That's awesome.
Especially in comedy. Like, we have to take care of our mental state, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's your moneymaker.
And we're taking on people's stresses all the time. We're like melting their problems for a few seconds at a time.
Yeah.
A hefty thing that we take on.
Well, I was going to say, I was like, having a mom who had some, you know, addiction issues and mental illness, are you hypersensitive and like hyper aware of making of self-care in those respects with yourself?
Totally. Totally. Because I do know that my mom experimented with drugs and then had issues like bipolar disorder after that. But I don't know if there were...
What, like psychedelics?
No, I think she was like smoking crack, but...
Because I was like, I've actually never heard of like a true mental illness coming from anything but psychedelics. And then that was just paranoid for myself, really, to be honest.
Which is fair. That's a fair concern to have.
So wait, there's scientific studies that like back up or doctors that have said like this is onset from the crack?
I don't know that. That's why I'm saying like, I could say like, oh, shit. She became
my mom's
this
bipolar,
person.
She never did crack. But like,
that's what I'm saying. Like, well, I could say she became this person because she did all these drugs and then she had this whatever break.
But if her
she
mother
could have had that break regardless. She could have had it. She could have just cracked under the pressure of life. I don't know. Yeah, yeah. I have no idea what happened.
It could come from, my mom had fetal alcohol syndrome because her mother, when she was pregnant, would drink when she was pregnant with my mom. And so if your grandmother was doing any sort of drug or alcohol.
I mean, my mom was 30.
Bipolar could come from that.
My mom was 30 when she had me. Like, she had went to college.
Oh, damn.
She was on her way to law school. Like, she was,
whoa,
her life wasn't in shambles.
How did?
But something happened in between that time mentally.
And you don't know.
I have no idea.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I've heard that she was like dating someone that was into drugs and then, you know, she got into drugs. I have no idea. I've never been able to have that type of conversation with her.
Yeah.
But I do think it makes me super hyper aware of how I feel about going to get help if I need it. Like I said, I've been in therapy twice where I felt like, oh, I need to go talk to someone about these feelings and make sure that I'm okay. And if they were like, hey, you need to take this pill, I would take it,
you know?
But I do feel hyper aware about that. I want to take care of my brain so badly.
Yeah. It's interesting to me that people, like, I'm noticing it just through talking to you and how you look at the world and your experiences. Like, people really do learn to please their parents, or they learn like based off of little instances when you're a kid and like dad looks at you weird when you're like, oh, you're like, I guess I did something wrong, and they make you doubt, but you never had anybody make you doubt yourself.
Not too much, really.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dang.
Well, because parents are kind of like a low level god when you're young in a way. Yeah. Like, they're these two kind of like pillars of perfection that you later find out are not pillars of perfection, and then it just fucks you up. Like,
yeah,
Santa.
So bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I've had to like defend myself even on podcasts before as being like, well, you don't have parents, like you. I get to even have people have made a joke like, well, something's wrong with you, nobody loved you. And I'm like, apparently those two people love the hell out of you, because now you're all fucked up. Like, I know
honestly, I feel like you're way
people.
Less fucked up because you didn't have parents.
I know plenty of people that came from two-parent households and are really
oh, God,
up.
Yeah, that's, I think, certainly no recipe for success.
Every person I've ever met from a two-parent household is fucked up.
She's like,
or any person ever, like, that is that kind of fucked up. And it's like, it's such a... It just casts a shadow on it. Like, it's so hard to break free from that mental state of like, I need to worry about what they're thinking and I need to dictate my decisions and how I speak. And
yeah, I love that
so
you
that
guys
mommy
are
doesn't get mad. That's so interesting.
I love that you guys are getting on board with this like Orphans Unite shit.
Yeah, dude,
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've since I was a little kid, I had a dream that I was going to marry an orphan just because I think that parents are so like, they're just, I feel like in don't every understand. Like romantic relationship, parents are getting in the fucking way.
Yeah. It's something that
they
set.
Should not be involved in at all. Yeah. Really? Like once you're an adult making decisions about who you want to be with romantically, why the fuck
get
are
out,
we?
Get out my bubble.
The things that people dick. Say like, oh, I can't date this person because they're this religion or this race or because they do this or because like, what are you talking about? That's yeah. not, I'm not even asking anybody about this. I would be so far. I'm so far into a relationship by the time anyone fucking knows about it. Mm-hmm. No feedback. I don't need a Yelp review on my life. Like, get out of my face.
I have no patience for that. There's no way I could date anyone and have to deal with their family more than I want to.
Right. And then for me, when anyone says like, oh, I, you know, something, when I hear too much about like mom or dad or parents, that's a really big alarm in my head. Like, this is not something I can be a part of. That's not okay. Like, I just can't imagine, like, you should be, you're your own person. And if you're not making, or even people who like care a lot about what their friends think to like a weird level.
Yeah.
I've had that before. And it's like, oh, you're not your own person. Mm-hmm. What are you doing?
You're just a baby.
Be around that.
Like, you know, how do you need, I don't understand how you need help deciding like who you want to be with as an adult.
You know,
it's very strange to
figure
me.
Figure it out yourself. And that's hard work though.
No matter like if you're asking your mom or your dad or whoever for advice, you're never really being totally truthful with them about what you did.
Yeah,
and there's always a bias really for sure.
Who you really are, because this is a person that you don't want to be disappointed in you.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
You don't want to tell them the reality of the situation.
You should
that you
be a therapist
create.
For kids, for people with like that had just got fucked up parent issues, because I feel like you see it so clearly and it makes so much. It's so logical the way you reason with yourself of like, I don't need to care about what they think. Why would I?
Well, comedians are kind of like guerrilla therapists. I think
totally.
Like, I absolutely think you're just like we're just therapists gone rogue. So
we figured it out. We just talk about it in a different way.
Yeah.
It's very therapeutic and fun.
All right. Well, I think we're going to wrap up, but where can we find you performing?
Yeah. We do shows. Yes. Where you got shows.
Hopefully that guy with the flowers is not
hopefully
listening.
He's chilling. Hopefully you're chilling hopefully in Philly, not in New York.
You can check out my website at shanali.com. I always have all my upcoming shows, and you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Chanel_Ali. That's Chanel like the perfume, 2 underscores, Ali like Muhammad.
Perfect. Awesome.
Thank you.
You've perfected the
very
the promo.
Polished.
Loved it.
All right, guys. This has been Guys We Fucked, the anti-slut shaming podcast. We'll talk to you next Friday.
I finally came home. Everyone around, come inside again, clearer from one day to next, beautiful things around, love in my state of mind, finally come inside, memories full, but I am here and now, I settle down, my friends, goodbye to what's been, hello to what will come.